You are most welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke, and each and every week we try to spark some ideas as to how you can do your bit in terms of, well, supporting the environment and perhaps even going as far as tackling climate change. And on this week, we're going to focus on students because, love it or hate it, it is back to school season. And for many students, particularly those maybe waiting the Leaving Cert examination or even heading into sixth year, they're going to be looking at their options. And many young people have been inspired by the likes of Greta Thunberg. Indeed, many adults have been inspired by the variety of campaigners right around the world. And a new variety of study has popped up. And to join us now to talk a little bit about this is Betty McLaughlin. Betty is the, I think, Betty, can we call you the resident Midlands 103 guidance counsellor at this stage?
I think I have earned that title indeed, Aisling, at this point.
Well, Betty, thank you for joining us on Let's Go Green. You are very welcome to the show.
Thank you, Aisling. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, Betty, now I should say this is not just for young people. You know, there's at this time of year, a lot of us tend to take stock and we kind of maybe renew what we're doing and maybe make a couple of changes. It's kind of like a new year 2.0. And there are lots of new areas of study cropping up and new courses. And a lot of them are tackling issues around climate change and being more environmentally friendly. And if you're interested in that area, it can kind of be hard to know where to start looking. So I'm hoping you might have some advice for us, Betty.
Well, indeed, Aisling, yes. And there are new courses, there are new degrees. There have been, environmental science has been around for years. Geography, if anybody studies geography in third level, it has always looked at climate change. But right across the board now, in engineering, in architecture, in any construction courses, which are up, by the way, the interest is hugely up this year in applications into the CAO, for example, and the new courses in climate change and in environmental studies, they're all, there's great interest in those, going by the statistics that have come out from the CAO office. But so they have always been, but they're mandated now to make sure that in all of these courses that there will be modules there on sustainability and, you know, protection for the environment and making sure that that is, you know, that is underpinning all that is done now in planning and in policy for construction and environmental studies going forward.
That's really interesting. So even in construction studies, you might be doing
Absolutely.
Something around it. Okay, so let's go back to basics, Betty. And if this is something that you're interested in, and perhaps even you're at the stage now where you're picking the subjects you'll be studying for, say, the Leaving Cert, what are the basic requirements? Like, I remember when I was in school, my parents were very insistent on the fact that I would take a language and I'd do science. Now, I happened to be interested in both, so it wasn't an argument in our house. But there was kind of an expectation that if you wanted to get into anything kind of sciencey, that you'd at least have a foundation through your Leaving Cert modules.
Absolutely. And if you're interested really in environmental courses, to be sure that you have, you know, that you have the minimum requirement for every one of them that's out there, it's advisable certainly to have one laboratory science subject. Now, that science subject can be biology, it can be or chemistry or physics or agricultural science. They would be the main lab sciences. Now, in some instances, they would look at geography and they would look at technology as being it, but you are safer to go with one of the top four that I mentioned there, the agriculture science, the physics, the chemistry, or the biology, and then you will meet the minimum requirement. And that is only one. Now, in relation to the language, certainly, there, you know, it's still important and it's a highly valuable skill to have, but it's not necessary for the science subjects. It's not necessary for the engineering or for the construction. So if we're looking at sustainability courses, certainly some arts in some colleges will still look for it if you want to do geography, but there are lots of options out there to study geography where you do not require a language either. So okay. the main thing I suppose to point home there is the safest route there is to most certainly take one laboratory science subject.
And that can be one of the three. You don't, so if you don't, if you don't feel, or sorry, one of the four. So for instance, if, like I know myself, physics was never my strong suit. So, you know, so if you're not particularly interested in physics, it could be ag science, biology, chemistry. You can just have the one.
And certainly when you're picking it, you know, you're picking it in order to do well. And the thing is, you will have tasted those subjects. You won't have tasted the agricultural science subject, but it's very similar to a mixture, you could particularly say, to biology and I suppose there's a bit of geography in there too and a little bit of chemistry. And if you have an interest in farming, if you have any access to a farm, that's a very good choice. But otherwise, if you're not sure what that is, you have had a taster of biology, chemistry and physics, go with the one that excited you the most, that you had the best aptitude for and the most interest in, because any one of them is going to help you to go with your further studies.
Now, Betty, like, it's a long time ago, it's almost 20 years ago since I sat my Leaving Cert. But I remember at the time finding the whole filling out the application forms, deciding what, picking what course I wanted, completely overwhelming. So if, like, as you say, there are so many options. If environmental studies, sustainability, climate change, if any of that is in your area of interest, how do you start narrowing down which one is for you or even to start researching about them?
Okay, well, I have to say, say if a student comes to me for career guidance, Aisling, what I would certainly say, first of all, I would do some little interest inventory tests with them to see where is their area of interest. Are they on the right track? Now, you can do some of those yourself. You can just do career interest tests. You can Google that. Some will come up. There's one on Careers Portal. There's one on... there's also one on qualifacts.ie, and that's a starting point, but that's only a starting point. Then I would say there's also, so say we just look at the Qualifacts website, you can go in there and you, on the drop-down menu, they will say, you know, what is the student, what do you want to do? And you would go Course Finder, and then you could go into CAO, which is the university colleges, and you know, courses, or you can look at the post Leaving Cert courses as well, which are another great route into college. And so you put into the key search then, you know, climate, sustainability, environmental, just that keyword, and see what comes up. You can also define it down by saying, well, I want to go to college in a particular province, be it Leinster, be it Ulster, be it Connacht, Munster. Put that in to define it down, and that will throw up all the courses available in that area. Now, you will look then as well, you would have an idea. I know it has been, very fluid with the points for the last few years, but you'd have an idea what your own level of attainment would be at this stage. You could look at your 5th-year results and make out there, well, what kind of points did I get this summer? So say you got 450. So you could say to yourself, I'd be realistic here, I look at courses between 500 and 350 or 300 to cover myself. So you could filter it down to that. But the most important thing when you're looking at these courses is absolutely first and foremost looking at what are the subjects that are taught on this course, what are the modules, what are the things that I will be studying. And then what I would do, Aisling, is say, well, does that interest me? Does that excite me? Would I be able for that? Would I be good at that? Do I like subjects like the built environment? Do I like subjects like alternative energy and energy systems? And if you like them, and they excite you, then that is a course worth pursuing. If they don't interest you, if you have no idea what they're about, well, then I would be saying keep clear of it, really. Because as you know, Aisling, the dropout in courses is quite high, and it's very upsetting for a student to go into a wrong course because they haven't researched it properly and discover it's not what they thought it was. you know, it, now is the time to do that research and set yourself up for success rather than, you know, a disappointment.
I had a maths teacher in secondary school and said, if you fail to prepare, you're planning on failure or something along those lines. And, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, it's not just the name of the course that matters. It's the modules that you'll be taking.
Absolutely, Aisling, and names can be very misleading. You really have to look, well, this is that just sounds good, but what would I have to study? What would I have to be good at? What would encourage me in this course? Would that be enough to get me out of bed in the morning, make me feel good about myself, and let me, you know, taste what success is and progression, and I want to succeed here, you know. And then after having picked the course and looking at the, you know, what subjects I'd be studying, once you're comfortable with that, it's important to look at, well, what careers will this open up for me? Where will I be studying? And you, on Careers Portal as well, and on the Qualifex.ie, you can look, and you can look at what are the career, the graduate destinations. So that would be the students who have already done this course. Where are they working now? And do those type of jobs and those opportunities excite me? And that's how you make the decision. And it is complex and it does take time, but good research and planning, definitely, as you said, to fail to plan is to plan to fail. And it's certainly worth planning now and researching now when you have time.
Well, Betty McLaughlin, as I say, Betty's the Residence Guidance Counsellor here on Midlands 103. And tonight we're discussing your options as far as study is concerned, if you're interested in doing something for the environment. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. And tonight I'm joined by Guidance Counsellor Betty McLaughlin. And we've been discussing your options for courses that you can take if you'd like to perhaps change career, or maybe you're starting out and you want to choose a career that does something for the environment. Instead of talking about it and worrying about it, maybe you want to be a change maker and you've decided that, you know what, this is going to be my next port of call. So Betty, we've talked about, particularly for secondary school students, the subjects that the minimum requirement and how important it is at least to have one science subject in there, and the research that you should put into choosing a course that's for you. What courses are available, Betty? Because I know we kind of gave an overview at the start of our conversation, but like I notice a lot of courses being advertised by Trinity, their tangent programme at the moment. They're offering part-time courses in around climate change and the environment, and that's just one of the many ads that I'm getting. It does seem very popular.
Indeed it does. And again, you have to look at that. Climate change, it's very interesting. A number of people that would do some of those part-time courses, Aisling, might already be working in that area. So, you know, it depends on what you're doing yourself. A number of those courses might be postgraduate courses. So you need to look at, you know, what course is this? Do, you know, is it an undergraduate course where anybody can do, you know, or is it a postgraduate course? But looking at the climate change courses, if you want to go in, I would also still say it's worth considering, okay, if you're very interested in that and you have researched it and you're happy with it, but it's also very possible to do a general environmental science course or energy systems course, or looking at even geography. We cover a lot of sustainability now if you wanted to do it through an arts degree. So it's, you know, they all are interesting. They all have their merits, but it's, you know, picking a course is just absolutely unique to the person themselves and what their own skill set is, their aptitudes and their interests. Really, any course that has environmental science, sustainability, they will all touch on alternative energy systems now. What is the most careful way, I suppose, the most protective way to use energy, to source energy that's going to protect our environment, which is in a state of flux as well, as we know. So really it's about looking at it, but not being swayed by the name. But again, as I say, it's back to looking at what will I be studying if I do this course.
Betty, we would be remiss having this conversation if we didn't acknowledge the accommodation crisis and just how difficult it's going to be for students to get accommodation this year. So are these courses, if you're looking ahead and you're thinking, well, you know, if I'm going to be looking at this time next year, and if the price of rent in Dublin at the moment is unaffordable, it's not likely to be affordable next year. So these courses, are they centred in Dublin, or do colleges around the country touch on them? Because I remember, like, when I was going, this, my chosen area of study happened to be in Dublin, and that was kind of my only option. But for these kind of courses, for the likes of construction and engineering and environmental science, are all the regions covered?
Absolutely they are. And, you know, there is a big move. I see it here in Mullingar, even to students looking to know, you know, to avoid the city if they can, if the course is available to them in Athlone, or if it's available to them in any of the regional, you know, more close by, maybe less densely populated towns. Those courses are available right throughout the country, Aisling. And the important thing to say, it really doesn't matter where you get the degree. What really matters is the quality of that degree at the end. So if you like the results you get at the end of it, and that is, if you want to go on further, employers look for people who have excelled in their degree. Getting a 2-1, getting a, you know, a good mark in their degree is more important than where it comes from. So that's important to note, you know, and don't be swayed by thinking one college is better than another. They all have external examiners. And if you get a 2-1 result, say 60%, 55%, 60%, what you get in your degree, that stands. That is totally acceptable. And that is more important than where you get a degree from. Because if you want to apply for postgraduate courses, or if you want to apply, if you want employers to be sought after by employers, and for employers to sponsor you, for example, and pay for a master's course for you, you will be needing a good result in your degree, and it doesn't matter where you've got that degree. And they're equally well monitored. They're standardized courses. They're externally monitored. And the Department of Education will be standing over them and sponsoring them, regardless of what college you choose to study in.
That's a really good point, Betty. And as somebody who teaches at third level, that external examiner process is rather rigorous. So it absolutely is done no matter where you attend your course. And of course, something that younger people tend to, a trap they tend to fall into. And I know, like, it wasn't in my case, I wanted to do journalism. Journalism was in DCU. As it happened, nobody in my class in school was interested in going to DCU. So I ended up being the only person from my school that year to go to DCU. And that terrified me. All my friends went to Galway that year. But it was the very best thing that could possibly have happened to me. And I know I hear young people talking now, oh, well, I want to go to Galway because all my friends are going to Galway. Do you know what? Mary Kate and Alice down the road might have a brilliant time in Galway, but if you've not found the right course for you, and if the course you join up to in Galway is not for you, you won't have as much fun.
Absolutely not. And I mean, it's your interest. And wherever you go, I mean, I would say it, and even if, Aisling, we have any students out there listening who are now going to head off to college, it's so important for you to be there for the orientation, for the beginning, where they get you, they introduce you to all the clubs and societies, and where you'll meet people and you'll make friends, you know, and you'll make friends on your course wherever you are. They'll be like-minded with similar interests, and, you know, you're going to be okay. And also, I have seen through years as well, students telling me they want to go to Galway, for example, or they want to go to Limerick because their friends are going, and their friends don't get the course in Galway, and very often they could end up being the only person going anyway because they thought their friends were going to go. So look, I would say you have to be true to yourself when you're choosing this course. You have to pick the course you want. The area, once you can commute to it, and once you feel comfortable in it, everything else will fall into place once the course is right.
And from personal experience, there's nothing better than turning up and finding a group of really sound people who are interested in the same things as you, because that's a very new experience at that stage of life. And it's a fantastic experience. So if you are about to head off for the next couple of weeks, we wish you the very best of luck. I know it's a daunting time, but trust your gut and you won't go far wrong. Betty, for students now maybe heading into fifth and sixth year or even TY, I know things have been different the past couple of years, but how important is it that they attend the open day?
I think it's very important, Aisling, because we mentioned there about people and the dropout. The dropout in college, having been, you know, there's been studies done, and they would say that the reason students drop out is firstly because the point we're hammering home here tonight is that the students haven't done the research and the course was not what they thought. But another reason for dropout is very much that they didn't feel they could connect, that they just did not fit in with that particular environment. And I know, you know, it is so important. If you're going to spend 3 or 4 years in a college, it's very important that you visit it, that you get that sense for it, and you can say to yourself, I would feel comfortable here. I could negotiate this campus. Yes, I would feel okay. Yes, I would. I want to go home every weekend and this is manageable for me. You know, these things are important. I remember my own son when he went, he was going to do computer studies. And I remember on the him going to the open day, and UCD and ECU were on the same day. And he went over to UCD and he said, oh, no, ma'am, I would never feel comfortable here. This is too vast and too big for me. And then he went to the smaller university campus. And he got that homely feeling that this was for him in DCU. You know, so I think going there, getting that feeling is so important. And it's well worth going to the college and visiting it and asking the questions that you want to ask, you know, that you need to ask. And looking at talking to other people who have done the course that you're interested in. And I would say when you are going to the open day, have a set of questions you want to ask. Know what area of study and find that particular faculty and find those experts in that course that you want to speak to, as well as going around looking at the clubs and societies that are there and looking at the student supports that are there, and then you'll have a good feel for it. And I would say go with your gut instinct when you do go in as well. You will look around, you will say, yes, I want a small university. No, I'm fine in this big university. This is exciting for me. Everybody is different and it's a very personal decision.
And those questions are so important. There's nothing worse than being on the bus home and realising, God, I should have asked this or I should have asked that. So, like, just have the confidence to speak up on the day. Go nosing about the place, you know. And as I said myself, like, in Ballyfermot College, we're having our open day on the 7th of September. It's our first in-person open day in over 2 years. We're terribly excited about it. But, like, make sure that you ask the questions and you get the information that you intended to get on the day. Don't get nervous when you're there in person. Well, Betty McLaughlin, a guidance counsellor extraordinaire, thank you so much for your time today. Your wealth of knowledge is very impressive, and it is important, Betty, to do that bit of research and as you say, not get swayed by the name of the course. You know, if you're interested in doing something in around the environment, look at the modules, look and see if you're really interested in spending the next 2, 3, 4 years of your life studying these things.
Absolutely, Aisling, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I hope you have been enjoying our conversation so far this evening. Well, we're turning to matters at home now, and I know over the past number of weeks we have mentioned the idea that you can retrofit your house and you can go towards a heat pump if you want, but if your heat pump, you know, is on the wish list and not on the I can actually afford it list right now, you can do something about your home heating now to look at the amount of emissions your house is releasing and to get the cost of your energy bills down, because, my God, they are going up And I know it's something that each and every one of us is very worried about heading into this coming winter. So we're joined now by Tom Halpin. Tom is the Head of Communications at the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. Tom, you are very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me on, actually.
Now, Tom, I know in an ideal world, we would all have the budget to go out and retrofit our homes. But for an awful lot of us, that's just not feasible at the moment. And this winter, we are going to be using the boiler, whether it's a gas boiler or an oil boiler to heat the house, to heat the water, to heat the radiators. And we're going to be very reliant on them. But we should, there are things we can do. Like, I suppose, we kind of think of them as being, well, God, they're so bad for the environment. We don't even like to acknowledge the fact that we have one in our own home now at this stage. There's nearly a bit of shame around them. But actually, if we take care of them and mind them, we can do something to benefit the environment. Talk to me a little bit, Tom, about that.
Okay, well, thanks again, Aisling, for having me on. So we can all see around us how the war in Ukraine in particular has impacted on energy prices and energy availability. And there is a sense, people sometimes have a sense that this is a global issue, so it needs to be addressed globally. But if we just look at our own individual homes, about two-thirds of the energy we use is for home heating. And as you rightly say, not everyone has been able to make the move or is even ready to make the move to a heat pump. So people are using oil boilers and gas boilers. And these are mechanical devices that need to be looked after, much like a car. And if you service your boiler regularly, you get three huge benefits. The first one is it's safer to use. The boiler service engineer, he or she will see if there's any issues that might lead to, you know, potential risks with its operation. Second one is it's going to be more reliable. And that is that, again, they might see items that would be likely to break or need to be fixed now before it actually goes, and you end up with a grudge repair in mid-January. But the last reason that we advocate people servicing is because as part of the servicing, the engineer will clean the internal parts of the boiler that actually get clogged up with soot. And when you do that cleaning process, you actually improve the efficiency of the boiler itself. And that efficiency will save you maybe about, that efficiency improvement could save about 5% on your energy bill. Now, with the price of oil, for example, at the moment, well north of a euro a litre and probably heading towards a euro 50 a litre, depending on your supplier, 5% reduction is dramatic. It's like reducing your fuel price by that amount. But it also then means that we're putting less demand on the amount of oil we're using nationally. So if you think of all of the homes that are connected to oil or gas, all of us reducing by 5% means all of that heating demand is reduced. So there's less demand for fuel to come into the country. And then there's a subsequent reduction in the amount of emissions as well. So this is where a global issue translates into a national issue and then translates down into, well, what can we do? And in a way, actually, you mentioned, you know, about us feeling a little bit guilty about these devices. I don't think people should feel guilty about the desire to feel comfortable and warm in their own homes. That's a natural right and it's a natural entitlement. But I think it is right, on the other hand, if you use that guilt and channel that guilt into saying, well, I'm going to make sure that it runs efficiently. And when you have an efficient boiler, then what you should do is consider, how can I make it run efficiently inside? And that's when you get to time and temperature controls, using timers and using thermostats. So there's a lot we can do.
Okay, and that's good, because I think, like, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think there's an awful lot of, around this conversation around climate change, a lot of people, myself included, we can feel helpless. So it's great when we get to have conversations here on the show about things that we actually have control over, the things that we can actually do in our own homes. So you mentioned that we should be treating our boilers like we treat our cars. I know I'm fairly diligent about it. I get my car serviced on an annual basis because I like my car and I can't afford for it to break down on the side of a road. Mm-hmm. Is a boiler the same? Like, how do we have to get them serviced every year, every 2 years?
Well, it's probably not as complicated a machine, but there's heating parts in it, there's moving parts in it, there's pipes, there's connections, there's valves, there's thermostats, there is pieces in there. There's electronics, there's electrical, there's mechanical. So it's like, it's probably more like the engine of a Ford Escort from 1973 or something like that. But nonetheless, there's parts in it can go wrong, there's parts in it can break, there's parts in it can leak. And this is what you're, so yes, you should look after it. Now, the frequency of servicing is differs a little bit between the fuel type. As it happens, oil is tends to be a dirtier fuel, which means that it will tend to put out more soot. So on the heat exchanger, which is the bit that does the real heating job, that will soot up a lot more on an oil boiler. So the general recommendation is that you should service your oil boiler every year. A gas boiler, less so for efficiency. So if you're just looking for efficiency gains, you could probably get away with every second year. Having said that, it is a little bit like your NCT as well, and it depends. The older devices might benefit from a little more frequent looking after because the parts are more likely to go. You know, the way in your car, as you get the wear and tear, you know, the suspension is fine after year one, but after year 10, it might go this year or it might go next, and the NCT will detect that for you. So think of it that way, that there's bits there where, you know, when the service engineer opens up your boiler, he or she might see a little sign of a leak or a little sign of a rust, or even might hear a little noise from the blower units and fans in it that might say, no, the bearing on that is gone, but I'll put in a new one for you. Yeah, it'll cost you money. But now you know that bit's not going to go this winter. And there is, for none of it, you know, sticking with the car analogy, unfortunately you only get punctures when you're driving and the bloody inconvenient. But it's the same with heating. It will only break when it's running and it's only on when you need it. So, you know, this helps prevent. It's not a guarantee, but it should give you more confidence. And as I say, you're looking after it, it will run more efficiently, it'll cost you less to run, it'll more than likely the service will pay for itself, particularly at the higher prices of oil and gas at the moment. But you are doing your contribution, and if you then encourage your neighbours to do it, or your neighbours encourage you, think about the community benefit of that. You've also got cleaner air in the local area as a result, because your device is running much cleaner. And so this is where our collective action means a whole heap. It means a whole heap. Do you think that a quarter of Ireland's energy is used in homes? Now, we may not be able to do much immediately about the efficiency of our individual homes, but think about that collectively, as adults, homeowners, renters, etc., the energy we use in our home is a quarter of our energy use, and roughly therefore a quarter of our energy emissions. So if we collectively reduce our heating use by 5% and collectively reduce our electricity use by 5%, that's a dramatic reduction on that one big slice of the pie. And then business has to do its job, mm-hmm. Transport has to do its job, and public bodies have to do their job. But this is where we can really, really play a role.
So then, Tom, now we should say always use a qualified person to do the job.
Yeah.
Just because your nephew is great at fixing cars does not mean he's all right to fix to look at your boiler, okay? Get somebody get somebody who's actually qualified, who's certified, and you can look them up on the various regulatory authority websites. Now, Tom, you mentioned that we can do our bit then inside the home. And I know this is a controversial debate in my own family. In my home, I have a smart heating system that's electric, so I can heat by room. I have it all timed and scheduled. There are some people that say if you only heat the rooms that you're in, then you're trying to that heating source is trying to heat the whole house by osmosis, that it's not the efficient way of doing it. And there are those that are saying it is the right way to do it. So solve this one for me, Tom. What's the best way to heat your home to keep the costs down?
Okay, well, first of all, let's look at the whole of your home and try and address it from what you want to do. So what you actually want to do is you want to be comfortable at the times you're in rooms or you're moving around the house, and you don't need any level of comfort while you're out of the house.
Mm.
So the way to achieve that generally is twofold: time, having the heating on at the time you need it, and temperature, having it on at the temperature or the comfort level you need it. Now, by and large, and I'm sure this is probably the case for many, if not most of your listeners, most Irish homes tend to have a fairly rudimentary heating control system, which is, you know, one timer, probably one thermostat, or maybe a couple of thermostats. Newer homes built post 2000 will have a couple of thermostats controlling two or three zones. You should use those to your best ability, okay?
Okay.
And by best ability, that means, let's think about a regime that you might have. So in the morning you wake up, you want hot water for a shower, and you want the kitchen, this is during winter we're talking, you want the kitchen to be warm. You don't need the living rooms to be warm, but you want the bedroom and the bathroom to be warm. So they're your two zones, that's probably your zone. Your upstairs zone is your bedroom, and you turn on your the heating to give you hot water and keep the bedrooms warm. When you come in the evening, you don't actually need the bedrooms warm. When you arrive in at 5:30, you probably don't need a lot of hot water either. So you set the zones to be just for the living area, which brings on your kitchen, etc. So it really depends on the configuration of the heating system, and some are very smart and allow you to control all the rooms. Now, the issue of, you know, are you, if you turn off the heating completely in one room, is your heating system trying to heat the other rooms? It's a little bit of a philosophical one, to be honest, because it really depends. Well, it just depends on how the house itself is operated.
Now, Tom, you can't tell me this is equivalent to whether which came first, the chicken or the egg. But
no, it's not quite that. It is not quite that. But it could be deemed to be an ecumenical matter, Ted, because if you have a living room, kitchen, and say two unused rooms downstairs, two rooms that aren't being used. If the doors to those two rooms are closed, then yes, a certain amount, a small amount of heat will try and migrate in. But there will be no chance that the heating will try to heat those rooms. Because if you imagine, let's say your thermostat's in your hallway. So I think if your listeners think about the thermostat's in the hallway and it's set to 20 degrees. Now, I know that if I close, let's say we have an office, for example, in our house. I know if I close the office door and the heating gets to 20 degrees in the living area, if I walk into the office and the heating's off in that office, it's cold. Mm-hmm. So at no point has, so the heating has turned off at 20 degrees because it's reached a comfortable temperature in the living room. But it hasn't continued going to try and heat the office. So it won't do that. There will be a small amount. It won't be freezing cold. Having said that, just two considerations. Definitely, when you're heating individual rooms like that, unless you have underfloor heating with a heat pump, which tends to allow you to heat the whole of home together. But if you're operating on individual radiators, keep individual doors closed. Doors to heated rooms, keep them closed. Doors to unheated rooms, keep them closed. And the last cautionary thing is, even in rooms that you deem to be unheated, it's best to keep them on a little small flow. If you have a little radiator valve, it sometimes has a little frost or a little snow flake marking. That's a frost protection. In other words, it keeps the room just trickling over with the smallest amount of heat. It'll prevent condensation because a very cold room, it may not draw the heat, but by God, it'll draw warm, moist air, and that's where you'll get your condensation issues.
And if that room happens to be, say, the spare bedroom that only gets used once or twice a year, and you've got a few nice special clothes in the wardrobe, you want to make sure that you don't open that in 6 months' time, and they are all musty.
Exactly.
So you know that's a really
exactly.
good tip. So that's what that little frost icon is for on the, because I've seen that and not known what it's for. So that's on the radiator valve. Like an awful lot of houses will have those white or those off white radiator valves with the thermostats of like one to five, and you'll see the frost icon on it. Okay.
Precisely, actually. That's why that's for. It allows it just run. You mightn't even feel the radiator warm, but basically what it'll do is it won't allow the room to get hot because it's a frost setting. So I don't know, it might kick off the rad when the room gets to 8 degrees, which would feel cold, but there's no way it's going to be it's going to get frozen as such, you know, and that will help prevent the condensation. Good ventilation is important as well in rooms that are unused like that.
Well, even Tom,
ventilation seems like an anathema to heating. We do need fresh air.
Absolutely. Well, Tom Halpin of the SEAI, thank you very much for joining us on this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I hope you have enjoyed our conversations this evening. My thanks once again to Guidance Counsellor Betty McLaughlin. And remember, if you'd like to look up those courses that we did discuss in or around environmental studies, geography, construction science, anything to do with sustainability and taking action against climate change, look at qualifacts.ie or indeed careerportals.ie. And of course, Tom Halpin's tips and tricks on how to reduce your energy costs, reminders on getting your boiler serviced and serviced by a qualified person, you can look up seai.ie. And as we have mentioned on the show before, don't forget that the SEAI has all the information about any grants that you might be eligible for if you'd like to make improvements to your home to cut down on your own household emissions. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Let's Go Green. I'll be back same time next week with the show, but remember, in the meantime, if you'd like to listen back, you can do so on your preferred podcast platform, be it Spotify, Apple or Google Podcasts. Please do like and subscribe or follow depending on the platform, and even, you know, you can write a review if you enjoy the show. Any bit of help, we will take it from you. Thanks again to our loyal listeners. We do appreciate hearing from you each and every week. Stay tuned, stay safe and have a great week.